I was born into a confusing family. When I was brought home from the hospital, there were eight of us that lived in the same house. That included my grandmother, whom we called Nana, and my grandfather, who we called Granda, but he really wasn't my grandfather. My grandfather had died 30 years earlier. My grandmother remarried. That's what brought her to the United States of America. And there was my mom and my dad, and there were my three brothers, although they really weren't my brothers because they were born to a different mother who had died 5 years earlier. But my father remarried, so his wife number one was their mom number one, and his wife number two was their mom number two, but she was my mother number one. And except there was more to it because all of his wives were sisters. And honestly, it's just a little hard to explain, but it was normal for me because, I don't know, that's what I grew up with. And Jesus also had a difficult family to explain. Because he had one mother, but he had two fathers, one of whom was God, and the other of whom was Jesus. And his mother was a virgin when he was born, but after he was born, his mother and Joseph got together, and they had other children who were Jesus' brothers and sisters, sort of. They had the same mother, but different fathers, and it's kind of hard to explain, although it was normal for Jesus because that's what he grew up with. And then you add to all of this that Jesus wasn't exactly the typical kid in the neighborhood in first century Israel because he was forever before he was in the neighborhood. He was actually the Son of God who had become human. So Jesus was in that neighborhood and in the world itself, absolutely one of a kind. Now, most of us, when we think of Jesus, think of him either as a newborn in a manger or as a grown man who is out there performing miracles. And we don't much think of him as in between or wonder how he got from being 22 inches long at 6 pounds and up to 165 pounds at 5'6". And we forget about him taking his first steps or speaking his first words or learning to read or liking girls or growing body hair or having his voice change from soprano to baritone. Just imagine what growing up from infancy was like, that this was God who had to be birthed, who threw up on his father's shoulder, who had to have his diapers changed. And when he went out to play with the other children, he fell and he cut his knees and cried and had to be bandaged up. And in his father's carpenter shop, he would occasionally hit his thumb with a hammer. And when the flu epidemics went around each season, he became ill just like everyone else. For Jesus was not only a baby and a man, he was a toddler and a child and an adolescent, and he was just like all of us. Most of us know the story leading up to and through Jesus' birth, that Mary was an engaged teenage virgin whose early pregnancy test came back positive, and whose fiancé wanted nothing more to do with her, but an angel talked him into keeping the engagement and eventually marrying her. So they got married, but there was no sex in their marriage until after Jesus was born, and she became repeatedly pregnant after that honeymoon 80 miles away in Bethlehem and had multiple children. And after Christmas, after Bethlehem, they stayed in Bethlehem, didn't actually go back to their hometown of Nazareth for a while, and the reasons are not stated, but we are told that a week and a day after Jesus was born, on the eighth day when it was time to circumcise him, he was named Jesus, the name the angel had given him before he had been conceived. When the time of their purification according to the law of Moses had been completed, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord. and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves or two young pigeons. When Joseph and Mary had done everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own town of Nazareth. And the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Ouch! Circumcision. That was for every Jewish boy when he was 8 days old, and nothing was more important. This was the physical mark of belonging to the chosen people of God. How important was it in Jewish culture? Well, let me tell you that a big deal was keeping the Sabbath day. You weren't supposed to do any work. You couldn't light a fire. You couldn't walk more than a very short distance. There were just kind of endless rules of no work or labor on a Sabbath day. But circumcisions for boys that were born 8 days before a Sabbath were done on the Sabbath because it was just more important. That circumcision trumped the Sabbath day and the Sabbath day rules. And circumcision day was also naming day. The name had been chosen by God and communicated through an angel. And so Joseph and Mary, on that eighth day after his birth, gave him the name Joshua. Or as they would have said it, Yeshua. Or as we might say it, Jesus or Jesus. But whatever the language is that you speak his name, it always means the same. It always means the Lord is salvation. And there were lots of boys in those days with the name Jesus. What made him unusual was not his name, for there were others that shared the name as well. Old Testament law required that for 40 days after the birth of a child, that a woman and the child were not expected or allowed to participate in the religious rituals of the community, that beyond circumcision, they were to be kept separate. And then at the end of those 40 days, there was a sacrifice that was to be made. It was all spelled out in the Old Testament law. And the sacrifice included a sheep and a pigeon. The trouble was that for Joseph and Mary, a sheep was too expensive because they were poor people. And so there was a provision in the law, sort of a footnoted detail, that said for those who really couldn't afford it, who were among the poorer of the poor, that instead two doves or two pigeons could be substituted instead. So Jesus was consecrated, or we might say dedicated. He wasn't baptized as a child. That would not come until 30 years later. I'm most impressed with the statement that Joseph and Mary had done everything required by the law of the Lord. Good for them. Good for them. What they knew to do, they did, and they did well, exactly as God had called upon them to do it. Because there were all kinds of things that were outside of their control. Supernatural things, political things, over which they had no choice. But in the areas where they could be responsible, they were amazingly responsible. And I think that that is at least part of the reason why God had chosen Joseph and Mary to be the earthly parents and establish the home in which God's son would grow up. It was not the same for all of Jesus' brothers and sisters, because the Bible later tells us that when they grew up, some of them didn't believe. I've got to assume that Mary and Joseph did everything the best they absolutely could with their other children as they did with Jesus. But as every parent knows, not every child responds in the same way. And not every child comes out just like Jesus. But we can't help but be impressed that this child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. The baby grew to become a child and then a toddler. Told in a part of the Christmas story that I think millions of people have misunderstood over 2,000 years. Probably this Christmas season you will find or see or get or give, a Christmas card that will show three wise men in front of a manger with a star overhead, although that's clearly not what the Bible says happened. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born the King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be called, will be the shepherd of my people Israel." And then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, not the stable, they saw the child, not the infant, with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. The Magi were from an area that back in time was called Persia. Today we have a different name for it. Today we call it Iran. And just as it was part of the Christmas news in those days, Iran is very much in the news this Christmas time as well. The Magi were philosophers. They were priests. They were aristocrats. But perhaps most of all, they were astrologers, convinced that you follow your horoscope, which is set by the stars, which determines your destiny. They were absolutely not Jews, and they absolutely were not Christians. They were pagans. And by the time they traveled this far, the manger was only a memory. The child was a child and not a baby. The place that they were living in was a house and was not an inn or a stable or a cave. My guess is that by this time, Jesus was somewhere upwards to 2 years old. And when they came and they knocked on the house door, perhaps it was Jesus himself who opened the door and then called to his mother that there were visitors there. And it must have been an amazing moment for this poor working class family to have these foreigners, these wealthy aristocrats come to their house and to have a whole entourage along with them. And it must have been like winning the lottery when they were presented with expensive gifts of gold and incense and myrrh. Perhaps Joseph and Mary had only heard about such things, maybe at best seen them from a distance, but never close up, never touched them, never actually owned them, and probably couldn't dream that this would become the nest egg for difficult days that were coming when they themselves would be foreigners and aliens and refugees in another country. But at least for a few days, these poor people felt rich. At least at that time, these unimportant people felt really, really important. And those who had things to worry about had on that day their worries lifted. It was a few more years between the time they were in Bethlehem at first and Joseph and his family finally returned to Nazareth. The Bible tells us very little about Jesus' grade school years, although there are others who have offered their ideas. So outside the Bible, there is what is called apocryphal literature, apocryphal gospels. These are old religious writings that were never considered credible by the church or by Christians, and therefore never admitted into the Bible with the gospel stories that we have. but they do make for some really interesting reading. They tell us that Jesus was sort of a super boy, that when he was 6, 8, and 10 years old, that he could perform miracles, and in fact, that he did. One of them tells a story about Jesus seeing a sunbeam, and he jumps up and rides down the sunbeam. And then another time he has a pitcher of water, and he sort of hangs the pitcher of water on a sunbeam, and it just stays there. And then the other neighborhood children, they try it kind of disastrously and get hurt, but don't worry, Jesus is there to fix everything and to heal it all. And when there was mismatched wood in Joseph's carpenter shop, you know, it wouldn't fit together, Jesus would just speak a word or give a look, and suddenly it was perfectly jointed and matched. Some of the more interesting ones are when neighborhood bullies come around to the young Jesus and tease him, and so he zaps them. And they're shriveled up, except for on the days when he changes them into goats. That's sort of interesting, too. And some of the most bizarre stories are actually held for Jesus' school teachers. And I think that is written by those who had struggles with their teachers, because the stories go that when teachers scold Jesus, he just makes them blind, or in some cases actually strikes his teacher dead. Now today, we wonder, how could such nonsense have ever been believed in the first place? And we credit the church and early Christians for recognizing that this was sort of crazy stuff. But we wonder who was also crazy enough to pass that down through future generations. Until you open your email and some crazy person has written something that has been forwarded to you, and it's as wild as what you find in the apocryphal gospels. And what does it say at the bottom of the email? Forward this to everybody else you know. So what we in craziness in the 21st century do is what they did with those old stories back then. We don't know much about Jesus' early years, but we do know that he was a boy like other boys, but that he was also God, God in a boy's body. We do have one glimpse of Jesus' adolescence. In those days, there was a specific point in time when a boy became a man, and that was when he turned 13. Interestingly, throughout much of history, Christians adopted the same practice. It's only in modern times that we have stretched out adolescence for 30 years or however long it currently runs. But in those days, a boy became a man at 13, and we have a story the year before when Jesus was 12. How every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him, and after 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" Jesus asked. "Didn't you know that I had to be in my father's house?" But they didn't understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. They forgot Jesus. How do you do that? I mean, I've forgotten my cell phone or where I park my car, but I mean, how do you forget? This is sort of a parent's worst nightmare. And you'd think if anybody would be a little more on guard than anybody else, it would be the parents of Jesus. But they forgot him, and it took them 4 days to find him. But there was something big, something important, something else happening here. It was that Jesus was increasingly realizing who he was and what was his mission in life. And we see at 12 years old, his graciousness in the way he asks questions, in the way he listens. He was not a know-it-all. He didn't do most or all of the talking. But we do hear his wisdom and knowledge, and it seeps through and discover that he knows more and he's smarter than the philosophers and the theologians in Jerusalem. And we've got to ask the question, when did he know? When did he know that he was the Messiah? When did he realize that he was the Son of God? When did he find out that he was the Savior of the world? And we're not told. Probably Jesus couldn't name the date himself. It's just that when he was born as a baby, it wasn't something he thought about. And then there was a point in time when he just knew, he just realized. I suppose you could say it's something like our discovery of our own gender. For when you are born, you are a male or a female. But you don't know that. You don't think about that. But by the time you're an adult, that is at the very essential core of who every one of us is. That gender identity is just who we are. Well, what was the day, what was the year, what was the grade when any of us realized being a boy or being a girl? None of us could name the date. It was a process. We don't know. We don't remember. It's just we knew. It's just we realized this is who we are. And that's probably the way it was with Jesus, that he increasingly knew until he understood that he was the Messiah sent from God. His destiny was to save humankind from sin, that he was God on earth to take away the sins of the world. There is one more piece of Jesus growing up that's not in the Bible, but it's from secular history. Jesus grew up in the town of Nazareth, which is in the northern part of Israel. It was a very small and insignificant town in an agricultural area. Outside of the Bible, it is barely mentioned in history, and at best, there is little, if anything, of archaeological evidence that is left from this era. Estimates of the population when Jesus was growing up, somewhere around 150. Hey, that's less than the number of people that come to church on a blizzard weekend. It wasn't a very big town at all. That the Son of God had left heaven to come to a town of 150 people. He landed in a really boring and isolated place. But 4 miles down the road was a much bigger town that was known across the empire because it was the location of the Roman armory and one of the capitals of Galilee. It was named Sepphoris, and there were thousands there. It was a trade center. It was where the Roman army had part of its troops stationed, and it was a place that I am almost sure that Joseph and Mary and Jesus and the rest of the family frequently went to make their purchases and to sell their products. It's totally probable that Jesus knew Sepphoris extremely well. Well, when Jesus was 11 years old, there was an uprising at Sepphoris that was led by a man called Judas the Galilean. He attacked the Roman armory, and the Roman response was fast and brutal. Led by the Syrian governor, Varus, the Roman army marched on Sepphoris and burned the town to the ground. The archaeological evidence there is plenty, and you can go see it for yourself. And not only burned the town to the ground, but sold into slavery all of the citizens of Sepphoris, except for 2,000 men who were counted among the rebels. And all of those 2,000 men were crucified, cross after cross, lining the road outside of Sepphoris. So imagine being 11 years old and walking down a familiar highway, cross after cross, thousands of them, with men writhing in pain, bleeding, gasping for breath, some of them praying for God's mercy and others cursing against the Romans. It was It was something that an 11-year-old could never, ever forget. And so burned into the memory of Jesus at a very young age was the realization of the brutality of the cross and crucifixion. The eternal, almighty, magnificent Son of God became an embryo. He was born a baby. He learned to toddle and to talk. He grew up through adolescence and became a man in order to give his life on a cross for us. The New Testament describes Jesus as being in very nature God. But he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Our Father, we do not have adequate words to thank you for the gift of your Son, that he who was the eternal God and still is, stepped down from the glories and the comforts and the powers of heaven to become one of us, to be born like us, to learn to talk and to walk, to go through the stresses and strains of adolescence, just like us, and to become a man, like we are adults, and then to go to the cross so that we don't have to. We can't find the words of gratitude, but we tell you that we believe and we say thanks, and we put our total faith on this Jesus, in whose name we pray.